My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER, promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. Hey, it's that time of year for those of you, God forbid, you got to keep your New Year's resolution. What if you're a timeshare owner and you want to get out of your timeshare? Maybe that's at the top of your list, or maybe you made a bad investment over the years. It doesn't matter. Let not your heart be troubled, because the new year is also a reminder that you can get serious about getting rid of this timeshare and doing it right and doing it legally. And Lone Star Transfer is absolutely an amazing group of people. From beginning to end, I highly recommend, if you have any type of timeshare, I want you to contact Lone Star and tell them I told you to call. They'll give you a free, no obligation consultation, and they'll help get you out of your timeshare. They'll do it the right way, the legal way, and it will take very little effort on your part, just by calling #250 on your mobile phone and saying the keyword timeshare. That's #250 on your cell phone, keyword timeshare. You can check them out online at LoneStarTransfer.com.
You have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from iHeartMedia.
All right, glad you're with us. We're still in the swamp, the sewer, known as our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Glad you are with us. Although our number remains the same, it's 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, we got a lot happening. A total mess is now developed in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Now, look, if you look at the line of secession, it's the governor, well, then the lieutenant governor. Now, the governor's the one that said, well, we'll deliver the baby, and then the baby, you know, we'll make the baby comfortable, and then the mother can decide whether the baby lives or dies, if it's struggling and needs resuscitation, and then we'll all have a meeting. And then after that, it was on his medical school, I guess, yearbook, that a picture of a Klan member and somebody dressed in blackface. And he said, well, I apologize. Wait a minute. Then he says the next day, it wasn't me in the picture, but I still dressed in blackface. And then that's when he said he was trying to be Michael Jackson and could do moonwalking, which he was about to do, which shows the man is so clueless and out of touch at the press conference. Well, until his wife stepped in. This may not be the appropriate moment, you dope. She didn't add dope. I'll add that part. Then we find out the lieutenant governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, in this case, a guy by the name of Fairfax. Well, now he's under trouble and serious allegations of sexual misconduct, in terms of he's literally being charged with sexually assaulting and forcing a violent sex act from a woman in 2004 at the Democratic Convention. Things have now just gotten worse for him, as the woman has hired the attorney for Professor Ford, if you remember, in the Kavanaugh case, number one. And number two, another woman has stepped forward and said, yeah, she told me all the details of everything that had happened at the time. And now Justin Fairfax, also, according to the Washington Examiner, NBC News, and other sources, had a meeting with his staff saying, F that B. So the person that was supposed to replace the governor is now under serious scrutiny himself and a serious investigation. It's going to be interesting to watch the Democratic Party, all the believers. I believe I'm falling in love. Remember that song? It's too late to turn back now. Okay. So, but in this case, you know, where are the I believe people? Because they only believe a woman that is accusing a Republican or a conservative or somebody they politically disagreed with. So they're using the serious topic, And remember what I was saying at the time with Justice Kavanaugh? You know, I had rare praise for the Republican Party as a whole, because I'm not a registered Republican. And my praise was, oh, they're actually handling this with the proper amount of seriousness, the gravity of the issue, and the sensitivity that such an issue would require, and they did it right. And they opened up the investigation. Professor Ford had her opportunity to speak. All these other wild accusations, many now that had been debunked. Like, for example, it was Avenatti's client claiming that almost on a weekly basis that teenage girls were getting drugged and they were spiking the punch and the girls would pass out and they'd be in a bedroom and the boys would line up in the hall and one by one they'd go in and gang rape these young teenage girls. These teenage boys would drug the girls almost on a weekend basis. Then her story started to change. Swetnick was her name. And then it became, well, I didn't see him at the, he was near the punch bowl and I saw him holding a red Solo cup. No, he wasn't in line in the hall, but I remember him being in a hall. Okay. Nobody else corroborated that story. And if that had happened, I have a very, very hard time that something as evil and severe as that was happening on a weekly basis or nearly week basis, and nobody told the teacher, their mom and dad, the police, an adult of some kind. So, and then it kind of interestingly, then Avenatti himself got accused of some type of altercation with a woman. And I remember going on air saying, I'm not going to rush to judgment, even though I have political differences with Michael Avenatti. He has a right to do anything and say anything he wants. I don't care what he says, but he had a right that we to due process and the presumption of innocence. That's which he and the Democrats never, ever, ever, you know, gave Judge Kavanaugh. Well, by the way, it turned out to be a different result in the Avenatti case, in as much as he was exonerated by three separate departments that investigated. So that's why you don't rush to judgment. That's why you withhold judgment. You wait for the facts to come in. Look at what happened with these Covington kids. You know, this one kid in particular, I mean, it, just an absolute disgrace. You know, when the media just, they just wanted to run with that story without any, really, seriously, without any, you know, support whatsoever. They never even asked the kid what had actually happened. They never said, okay, we want your side of the story. What went on there? And then finally, more video starts coming out. And everything that had been said at the time about this kid, that he had approached Nathan Phillips, the Native American who was banging on the drum, and he said praying, none of that turned out to be true. And in fact, the person that became the victim in that case was the kid that was, you know, the only thing he did wrong, I guess, was wear a Make America Great hat again. And all these news organizations, all these Hollywood celebrities, all these Democrats that rushed to judgment, you better get ready because there's a guy, I want you to remember his name because you're going to get to know him intimately. And his name is Lynn Wood. And on this particular issue, there is no better attorney in the country than Lynn Wood as it relates to libel and those types of laws, because he represented back in the day, he represented, when I first got to know him, Richard Jewell. And every one of those organizations that said Richard Jewell fits the profile of the lone bomber because he lives with his mother, well, I'm sure a lot of the settlements were non-disclosure. They all paid a fortune for what they did, their mob mentality. We see the mob mentality all the time. I can't believe the media's reaction even last night. What made the president's speech last night, and by the way, we'll get back to the Virginia issue as it unfolds, because now the AG of Virginia is also admitting that he used blackface. So if the governor were to leave, the person that would replace him is under serious investigation for violent sexual assault. If he can't replace the governor, then it would be the attorney general, who also earlier today admitted, oh, yeah, I use blackface, too. I'm guilty. the Attorney General of Virginia at a College Day party. Now I guess the person that would be next in line would be the Speaker of the House there. By the way, back to the Covington kids and Lynn Wood. You know, I got a note from Lynn that he gave exclusively to us saying my duty, our attorney's duties is to their client. They don't begin inside the courtroom. My co-counsel, Todd McMurdy, and I fully intend to aggressively advocate for Nick, not only in the courts of law across the country, but also in the court of public opinion. This is what he said about that incident. An agenda-driven mob trampled on Nick's reputation and permanently damaged him. Now Nick has no choice but to fight back against the lies and the threats. His weapon of choice is the truth. This video is the first step as it destroys the mob's false narrative against this young man. And then he goes bullet point after bullet point. Nick did not approach Nathan Phillips. He was confronted by Phillips, who picked Nick as his target. Nick did not block Phillips' path. Phillips made no attempt to go around or avoid Nick. Nick did not verbally assault, taunt, mock, harass, disparage, or threaten Phillips in any way. Nick remained calm and well-mannered despite Phillips' loud chanting and drum beating inches from his face. Nick didn't utter a single word. Nick's only act was to quietly urge a classmate to refrain from any comments that might aggravate the situation created by Phillips and that group that started it all, the Black Hebrew Israelites. Phillips did not proceed to the Lincoln Memorial after Nick left to catch his bus. Phillips turned, walked away, celebrating his win with fellow activists. And then they have the video. The media, they're going to get crushed here. All right, so last night's State of the Union. What made last night, if you're a conservative, what made it so powerful? Well, the answer's simple. You have a president, and I understood some of you in 2016 were asking me, and I said repeatedly, I've known this man for decades, he's going to govern conservatively. Well, he donated to Hillary, and he was once pro-choice. He's just going to go back to being pro-choice. He's only saying that to get elected. He doesn't mean this on judges. And I'm like, you don't know this guy. The one thing I can tell you about Donald Trump, this guy works 24 hours a day. I mean, it was kind of a joke. Oh, they leaked his schedule and he has like 5 hours built in every day of executive time, they call it. Let me tell you what executive time is. He's working the phones the entire time. Here, let me talk to the CEO of this company. Let me talk to the CEO of this pharmaceutical company. Let me talk to the insurance companies. Let me talk to so-and-so and get their idea on this. That's all he does. And I've seen it in action for years. He doesn't stop. He's unrelenting. And, you know, look at the promises he kept. You know, largest tax cut in history, two originalist justices to the Supreme Court. You know, now as a result of ending burdensome regulation and the largest tax cut in history, we now have an economic boom that has been launched, creating one record after another, especially helping the people that have been disproportionately left behind in the Obama years. You know, think about this. 5.3 million jobs created since he's elected. 600-some-odd thousand manufacturing jobs. Those were the jobs Obama said were never coming back. You know, then you break it down demographically. In the Obama years, disproportionately negatively impacted was the African-American community, the Hispanic community. They're now experiencing record low unemployment. We now have more jobs, a million plus more jobs than we have people on unemployment. That's how good it is right now. And once the Dakota and Keystone pipelines come online and we get to building the locations in Anwar, Alaska, you know, it is going to be even bigger. All right, we'll get into all this when we get back. Talk about the Democrats and their pretty pathetic reaction. Apparently, Speaker Pelosi was supposed to introduce the president. Whoopsie daisy, we missed that part. Listen, Valentine's Day, guys, it's here. I've got a gift that'll dazzle every Valentine in your life this year. And by the way, look, maybe if you married your wife, if you're not married, your girlfriend, if, what about your daughter? Doesn't she have a special place in your heart for Valentine's Day? Anyway, Sherry's Berries, what they do is a miracle. They handpick the biggest, the best, the juiciest, the freshest strawberries. Then they make them better. They dip them in milk and dark and white chocolatey goodness, and then they make it even better. Then they have their toppings, chocolate chips, heart and glitter sprinkles, and it comes in a beautiful Valentine's Day gift box. And when they arrive, she's going to open it, look at it, and your card, and go, wow. And she's going to be hesitant to first eat them. Then take one bite, then the whole box is gone. Now, Valentine's Day is around the corner. To all your Valentines this year, it's only $19.99 plus shipping and handling. And right now, you get a special offer. For $10 more, you can double the berries. All right, $19.99, and shipping and handling, $10 more, you double the berries. See for yourself. Just go to berries.com, B-E-R-R-I-E-S.com. Click on the microphone. Put in my last name, Hannity. See how beautiful these berries are, and you will be sending them to all of your Valentines. And why do you do it? You do it because you love the great people in your life, and you want to show them. It's that simple. We'll continue from D.C. Hey, guys, today marks the 7-day countdown until Valentine's Day. And I know a lot of you guys have already ordered that special someone, a gorgeous bouquet from our friends at 1-800-Flowers.com. But for the rest of you, you got to stop putting it off, because right now you'll get 18 beautiful red roses, just $29.99, or upgrade to 24 red roses, only $10 more. That's right, 18 red roses, $29.99, upgrade to 24 red roses, $10 more, an amazing deal. Now, roses from 1-800-Flowers, always picked at their peak, shipped overnight to ensure freshness. Now, bouquet prices are going to be going up soon. Take advantage today. Pick your delivery date. Let 1-800-Flowers handle all the rest. Again, to order 18 beautiful red roses for $29.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for just $10 more, just go to 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. Hurry, offer expires Friday. All right, so Jameel Hill worked for ESPN, right?
That's right. She was with ESPN.
And she got fired for some reason. I remember her name. I don't remember what the controversy was.
She wrote some not cool things.
Okay. What did she write?
I'd have to go back and find them. I don't want to misquote her.
But I hear it's pretty incendiary and threatening. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, last night she wrote some other things, which you have in front of you.
Oh, boy. All right. We'll get to that in a minute. This just breaking, by the way, the lieutenant governor issuing a denial to the allegation of sexual assault. But the woman is now giving details about it. And we'll give you those details as we continue to unfold. Here's why last night. And I turned on when I got home last night. I was on. I didn't get on till 11 after the Democratic response. And when I got on the air, I'm thinking, what made this speech more powerful than any State of the Union that I can remember in my lifetime? Because it just was. And the reason is we've never had this level of success in such a short period of time. And that's on the economic side. That's on national security, that is on promises kept, promises made. And for me, it's a validation, not just because I put my neck on the line. I have a lot of my credibility. If I tell you somebody's going to govern conservatively, I expect them to do it. In the past, I've been burned by people, Ben Sasse, although he did good this week with that one bill. Ben Sasse is not the person I thought he was at the time. One of the biggest mistakes I think I made. Sorry to the people in Nebraska, because he sounded like he'd be a total star in the Senate. And unfortunately, he's turned into whatever he's turned into. But he did do a good job this week, and I respect him for that. But this guy works at a pace and a speed that government can't comprehend. Democrats, Republicans, anybody that is in the bureaucracy, he is the ultimate disruptor, iconoclast. Yeah, and he tweets, big deal. We're getting people back to work, and American prosperity is growing, and safety is growing as well. smoking is not about politics. It's about people. There are 34 million Americans that smoke. But for me, Juul was a game changer. Because you switch to Juul, it's simple, it's satisfying, and no more smell. I watch people all the time. They run outside in the freezing cold and can be grabbing their cigarette. Well, with Juul, you'll take a quick puff and you're good. That's it. Now, Juul is designed with smokers in mind. From its form to technology, it's easy to use, no buttons, no switches. And the goal of Juul is to impact the lives of adult smokers by providing a satisfying alternative. Switch to Juul. You'll wish you had done it a long time ago. To discover the smoking alternative that is nothing like any e-cig vape you have ever tried, go to this website, juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. Warning, this product contains nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. juul.com/switchamerica. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. We'll get back to the State of the Union. Robert Mueller's office is in big trouble. A big, big story will break tonight. We have a preview with John Solomon and Greg Jarrett. We'll also be going back to the State of the Union. But first, this just released, remember the... Well, they have released the name of the woman involved in this case with the lieutenant governor of Virginia, Fairfax. And so I otherwise probably would not mention the woman's name, but it's now all over the media. And, you know, I like to be respectful of that. But Justin Fairfax is the supposedly he was the guy. Everyone wanted him to replace the current governor involved in that insane, grotesque, out of touch, chip missing comment about first we'll deliver the baby, followed up by the pictures in his yearbook, then followed up by an admission that he wore blackface. And that was then followed up by the lieutenant governor who was expected to take over. And now all of a sudden this serious charge of sexual assault has come up. And now the attorney general, who would then follow the lieutenant governor in the order of secession, he now admits he, too, wore blackface. I mean, and I guess just a mess. But here's the big question, because we all watched the Kavanaugh hearings. We all paid very close attention. We all saw the rush to judgment, as we see every time. But we only see the rush to judgment, it seems, when it is a Republican. And the Republicans, I think, handled it with the sensitivity, the appropriate level of concern about the issue, a sensitivity that was appropriate, and they slowed the process, and then the hearings unfolded. But in between, you had Kamala Harris and Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut, and Kirsten Gillibrand and so many others, you know, they were all out there saying, I believe.
Not only do women like Dr. Ford, who bravely comes forward, need to be heard, but they need to be believed. They need to be believed. I just want to say to the men of this country, just shut up and step up. Do the right thing.
Let me just say right at the outset, I believe Dr. Ford, I believe the survivor here.
I believe her. I stand with her. And
do you hope
I
she shows up on Monday? Do you hope that she testifies?
I don't think she should be bullied into this scenario.
I believe her.
I believe Professor Ford. I think she's credible.
Even Chuck Schumer. I believe. Well, now that they have a lieutenant governor in their own party, I'm not hearing very many I believes. As a matter of fact, I haven't heard one. And the media, the complicit, the propaganda wing of the Democratic Party, they're not asking those questions. What's interesting is now the woman's name that is claiming to have been assaulted by the lieutenant governor, Justin Fairfax, her name is Dr. Vanessa Tyson. And through her attorney, who happens to be the attorney for Professor Ford, she has now released a statement. I'll read it to you. It says, on the night of Friday, February 1st, 2019, I read multiple news accounts indicating that Virginia Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax would likely be elevated to governor as an immediate result of a scandal involving Governor Ralph Northam. The news flooded me with painful memories, bringing back feelings of grief and shame and anger that stemmed from an incident with Mr. Fairfax that occurred in July of 2004 during the Democratic National Convention in Boston. I remember that convention well because I remember one particular night we were hanging out and we decided I met a bunch of Boston cops and we went into this local pub and I wanted to buy everybody dinner, and we just had the time of our lives. They're the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. Anyway, I met Mr. Fairfax on July 26, 2004, when he and I worked at the convention. We struck up a conversation on the first day of the convention, soon realized we had mutual friends. We crossed paths occasionally during the first 2 days, and our interactions were cordial but not flirtatious. We commiserated about our long work hours, and on the afternoon of the third day of the convention, July 28, 2004, Mr. Fairfax suggested that I get some fresh air by accompanying him on a quick errand to retrieve documents from his room in a nearby hotel. Given our interactions up to the time, I had no reason to feel threatened and agreed to walk with him to his hotel. I stood in the entryway of the room, and after he located the documents, he walked over and he kissed me. Although surprised by the advance, it was not unwelcome, and I kissed him back. He then took my hand, pulled me towards the bed. I was fully clothed in a pantsuit, had no intention of taking my clothes off or engaging in sexual activity. In the back of my mind, I also knew I needed to return to the convention headquarters. What began as consensual kissing quickly turned into a sexual assault. Mr. Fairfax put his hand behind my neck. He forcefully pushed my head towards his crotch. Only then did I realize that he had unbuckled his belt, unzipped his pants, and taken out his penis. He then forced his penis into my mouth, utterly shocked and terrified. I tried to move my head away but could not because his hand was holding down my neck and he was much stronger than me. As I cried and gagged, Mr. Fairfax forced me to perform oral sex on him. I cannot believe, given my obvious distress, that Mr. Fairfax thought that this forced sexual act was consensual. To be very clear, I did not want to engage in oral sex with Mr. Fairfax, never gave him any form of consent, quite the opposite. I consciously avoided Mr. Fairfax for the remainder of the convention, never spoke to him again. After the assault, I suffered from both deep humiliation and shame. I did not speak about it for years, and I, like many survivors or most survivors, suppressed those memories and emotions as a necessary means to continue my studies and pursue my goal of building a successful career as an academic. At the time, I found this horrific incident especially degrading, given my regular volunteer work at a local rape crisis center. Over the next decade or so, I would go on to earn my PhD from the University of Chicago and become a tenured professor at Scripps College, a prestigious women's college in Claremont, California. Years later, in October 2017, I saw a picture of Mr. Fairfax accompanying an article in The Root about his campaign for lieutenant governor in Virginia. The image hit me like a ton of bricks, triggering buried, traumatic memories and feelings of humiliation. I felt so intensely back in 2004, and prior to reading that article, I had not followed Mr. Fairfax's career and did not know that he was seeking public office. Unsure what to do, I felt it was crucial to tell close friends of mine in Virginia who were voters about this assault. He says that October, the quote, Me Too movement intensified. And women throughout the world began forcefully speaking out about their sexual violence that they had experienced and the impact of those experiences on their lives. The courage of so many women coming forward to confront such powerful men and systems that allowed such abuse to occur are part of what inspired me to action. I felt the responsibility to myself, the beloved students I teach, the brave women I've tried to help overcome their own trauma, the passion and resolve of so many survivors, coupled with the job security and that tenure afforded me, gave me the strength I simply did not have in 2004. By December of 2017, I not only told many friends that Mr. Fairfax had sexually assaulted me, but I also reached out to a personal friend at the Washington Post and spoke to his colleague about the assault. After the Washington Post decided in March of 2018 not to run my story, I felt powerless, frustrated, and completely drained. Again, I tried to bury memories of this painful incident and focus on my work and my students. On Friday, February 1st, 2019, as stories appeared in the media suggesting Governor Northam would have to resign and that Mr. Fairfax would be sworn in as governor, I felt a jarring sense of both outrage and despair. That night, I vented my frustration on Facebook in a message that I wrote as a private post. I did not identify Lieutenant Governor Fairfax by name, but stated that it seemed inevitable that the campaign staffer who assaulted me during the Democratic convention in 2004 was about to get a big promotion. It was not my intention in that moment to inject myself into what has become a much larger political battle. The following morning, I was inundated with messages of care, concern from friends, including many I had told about the sexual assault, and numerous inquiries from journalists who had become aware of my post over the weekend. I was undecided about whether to speak out publicly. I knew if I did so, I would immediately face accusations about my motives, be branded a liar, as is routinely the case when women come forward with allegations of sexual misconduct against prominent men. On Sunday night, before I had time to decide on a course of action, an online publication published a screenshot of my Facebook post, identified me by name, posted pictures of me, and in response at 2:55 a.m. February 4th, 2019, Mr. Fairfax issued a statement further escalating the matter by calling me a liar and falsely characterizing the reasons the Washington Post decided not to run a story about my allegations. The Post was forced to repudiate Mr. Fairfax's statement that were significant red flags and inconsistencies within the allegations, which led it to decide not to publish the story about my account. Rather, as is often the case in situations where sexual assault by an acquaintance occurs behind closed doors years earlier, it's difficult to corroborate either the victim's allegations or the accused's denials. Mr. Fairfax's suggestion that the Washington Post found me not to be credible was deceitful. It was dishonest, profoundly upsetting. He has continued a smear campaign by pointing reporters to a 2007 educational video in which I talked about being a victim of incest and molestation. In that video, I did not talk about being assaulted by Mr. Fairfax. This, of course, is not proof that he did not assault me. His reliance on this video to say the opposite is despicable and offensive to sexual assault survivors everywhere. And she goes on. Now, since October 2017, when I first began telling friends about the assault, I have never wavered in my account because I'm telling the truth. I have no political motive. I am a proud Democrat. My only motive now in speaking out is to refute Mr. Fairfax's falsehoods, aspirations of my character, and to provide what I believe is important information for Virginians to have as they make a critical decision that involves Mr. Fairfax. With tremendous anguish, I am now sharing this information about my experience, setting the record straight. It has been extremely difficult to relive the traumatic experience from 2004. Mr. Fairfax has tried to brand me a liar to a national audience in service to his political ambitions and has threatened litigation. Given his false assertions, I am compelled to make clear what happened. I very much wish to resume my life as an academic and professor. I do not want to get further embroiled in this highly charged political environment. This is the only statement I and my legal team will be making. Now, what does Virginia do? Now you got the governor. Well, he should go. Then you got the lieutenant governor. You can't put him in place of the governor. But I want to know, where's Dianne Feinstein? Where's Kamala Harris? Where is Senator Blumenthal? Where is the senator from Hawaii? Where, Hirono? Where is everybody that said, I believe? Nowhere to be found. You know, the other good thing about the president's speech last night is, you know, at the beginning and the end, it's not about Republicans or Democrats. It's about an agenda for the American people. How do the Democrats ever reconcile their position that a president that offers to make the country safer, prevent the homicides, sexual assaults, violent assaults, cartels, drug members, the 90% of heroin coming into this country, that they won't even talk, the things they once supported, claiming they want DACA and Dreamers. President offers that. They still won't talk. President says, I'm asking you to choose greatness. No matter what trials we face, no matter what challenges to come, we must go forward together. We must keep America first in our hearts. We must keep freedom alive in our souls. And we must keep faith in America's destiny that one nation under God must be the hope and the promise and the light and the glory among all the nations of the world. Thank you. God bless you. God bless America. The president talked about everything. And when he went through, I'm not going to give the litany of his successes. I'll do it on TV tonight. But we've done it many times. But putting it up on our website, Hannity.com, all of his successes, something the media will never talk about. Look at what he said about North Korea. Look at the trade deals. Look at the energy. I mean, the fact that we're now the number one producer of oil and natural gas in the world for the first time in 65 years is amazing. We're now on target to be the biggest producer in all these forms. Look at criminal justice reform. What a powerful moment when Alice Johnson, who we have interviewed, was pointed out. And he said, welcome home to Matthew Charles, the guy that had been in prison in 1996, 35 years. Guy that did 30 Bible studies in jail. Look at the case that the president laid out for immigration and the safety of the American people. I'll never abolish our heroes from ICE, the president said. Well, I will get it done. The president's going to find one way or another. I've told you that. It may take time, but he's going to get it done. I have a lot of faith that he keeps his promises, and he has a track record. The power in his speech was the power in his policies that have worked, that an investigation, impeachment-obsessed media, hate-Trump media, hate-Trump Congress only care about.
This is Phil Robertson, and today in stores you'll find my book, The Theft of America's Soul, blowing the lid off the lies that are destroying our country. The book points out why America is being robbed. There are 10 lies the devil has attempted to use to destroy America's soul. Putting God back in our country is the key. The Theft of America's Soul offers 10 truths that, if acted on, will put God back into culture and turn the country around, and you'll find it everywhere books are sold.
My fellow Americans, we meet tonight at a moment of unlimited potential. As we begin a new Congress, I stand here ready to work with you to achieve historic breakthroughs for all Americans. Millions of our fellow citizens are watching us now gathered in this great chamber, hoping that we will govern not as two parties, but as one nation. The agenda I will lay out this evening is not a Republican agenda or a Democrat agenda. It's the agenda of the American people. Many of us have campaigned on the same core promises to defend American jobs and demand fair trade for American workers, to rebuild and revitalize our nation's infrastructure, to reduce the price of health care and prescription drugs, to create an immigration system that is safe, lawful, modern, and secure, and to pursue a foreign policy that puts America's interest first. There is a new opportunity in American politics, if only we have the courage together to seize it. Victory is not winning for our party. Victory is winning for our country. An economic miracle is taking place in the United States, and the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations. If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way. We must be united at home to defeat our adversaries abroad.
We will also be announcing the parameters of our investigation, which go beyond Russia, but in sum, will allow us to investigate any credible allegation that financial interests or other interests are driving decision-making of the president or anyone in the administration. We will be conducting our investigation to make sure that the country is protected.
One of the functions of the Congress, the Article I section of government from the days of the Founding Fathers, was oversight of the executive branch. And the president says, if you investigate me, I'm not going to make progress. That's doing what he did with the shutdown, holding the American people hostage. You know what I think it shows, John? He's scared. He's got something to hide. Because if he had nothing to hide, he'd just shrug his shoulders and let these investigations go forward. He's afraid of them.
All right, that was Chuck Schumer claiming, well, he's scared of an ongoing investigation witch hunt that has gone on unfairly, no equal justice under the law for the last, 2 years of the presidency. In spite of that, you know what? The president still had a list of accomplishments. It certainly would have been the envy of the 8 years of the Obama administration, wouldn't it have? And Adam Schiff, we now look at Adam Schiff. He's now saying, this investigation is pretty much so wide. If you look at what he's put out there, it is stunningly wide. It's no longer confined to Russia or to election hacking. Now they're going to investigate any connection between anybody that Donald Trump ever talked to in his life and any foreigner, and clearly designed to create a sprawling investigation that will never end, you know, getting into the president's finances and businesses and, you know, just any one connection so that they can see, we got you. You know, it's sort of like the KGB, the old style. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime. And that's where we're headed. But anyway, the president still high grades from the speech last night. The CBS poll, 76% of respondents loved what the president said, and 72% support his immigration policies. But with that said, there is another side of this investigation into Russia that is, well, blowing wide open more and more every day. As we discovered for once that, back in August, before they ever filed a FISA warrant, that everybody was warned in the DOJ and the FBI by Bruce Ohr. And they were warned very clearly that the dossier was paid for by Hillary, that it was created by a guy that hated Trump, a foreign national, that it was unverified and not corroborated. But they still used it. For example, Comey uses that. The bulk of that FISA warrant is application is the Clinton dossier. And then we learn, he says to the president-elect in January, well, it's salacious and unverified. Well, it was very verified by him when he signed it in October. And then it goes on to get signed four more times. And still it was never verified, corroborated, and key information withheld from the FISA court judges. Pretty crucial information like, Hillary, his opponent, paid for it. Anyway, joining us now, John Solomon from The Hill and Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst, author of the number one book, The Russia Hoax. Guys, welcome back. John, you've been breaking a lot of stories on this in the last week, as has Greg, too. Now we take it to another level when everybody now was warned specifically of what they should look for. They didn't pay attention on purpose.
Yeah, I think that's going to become the storyline. And Sean, there's going to be a story we'll be breaking tonight, and hopefully I can talk to you tonight about it on the television show. But it's going to show that Bob Mueller knew there was a history of FISA abuses in the FBI from his tenure at the FBI, that the FISA court took very extreme action in an earlier time for doing what has been alleged and shown to have occurred here. Omitting exculpatory evidence.
Slow down.
Evidence.
So Bob Mueller himself, in his FBI,
yes.
his FBI withheld exculpatory evidence as it relates to the investigation?
When he was before the Russia investigation. This is in an earlier time when he was director of the FBI from 2001 to 2014. There's an episode we're going to be able to divulge tonight that shows that he got a very painful admonishment from the FISA court for a pattern, more than 75 cases of FISA warrants that were submitted with erroneous or omitted evidence. So what's this going to show? It's going to show two things. The man running the Russia investigation today knows you should not cheat on a FISA warrant, and two, that the FBI had a pattern in practice that dates all the way back to 2001 of omitting important information and misleading the court. And the court, in an earlier time frame, back in that 2001, 2, 3, 4 time frame, took very extreme action and was very concerned. And the question that this will raise is, where's those judges today? Where's that Justice Department today? Where's Bob Mueller today? Where's Rod Rosenstein? Why don't they show the same concern for the omissions in this FISA warrant that the court showed and admonished Bob Mueller back in the early 2000s for when the FBI did it in other cases? So very important story that takes history.
Well, isn't it even worse than that? Isn't it even committing a fraud on the court knowingly? Conspiring to commit a fraud on a FISA court? Taking away the civil rights of an American citizen?
Well, it's very interesting. In the 2001-2002 episode, the court said, we don't care if you intended to do it or you didn't intend to do it, we will not tolerate this. They didn't care. Intention didn't even matter to them. The expectation was, if you're going to violate an American's Fourth Amendment, you better have the accurate, precise, honest means for doing it. And you take that standard and you apply it to this FISA the way Greg has done so many times on television, on this radio show, you can see that there was knowing, willful, and vast misstatement of facts and omission of facts that misled this court. So the 2002 standard still stands today. It should be applied to this case. And the only question I have is, where is the Justice Department? Where is the FBI? Where are the leaders of the FISA court? Why don't they show the same concern in 2019 that they showed back in 2002 and 2003?
Well, maybe they thought they could get away with it up until this point. Let me bring in Greg Jarrett. It's that would explain a lot of the reasons why Mueller had no problem appointing Andrew Weissman, a guy that we know himself was excoriated by a court for withholding exculpatory evidence, a guy that put four innocent men in jail, Merrill executives, for a year. That was overturned in the Fifth Circuit, a guy that ruined tens of thousands of jobs when he was the lead investigator in the Enron accounting case, and that ended up being overturned by the Supreme Court 9-0. So if he had issues of withholding exculpatory evidence, why would that bother Robert Mueller based on what John Solomon's saying?
You know, former Governor Chris Christie, who's on a book tour now, said something very interesting the other day. He said, I've worked with Bob Mueller. I've worked with Rod Rosenstein. Rosenstein hired an assassin in Bob Mueller. Now, obviously, that's hyperbole, but there's a level of truth to it. And the fact that Mueller ignored his own conflicts of interest in taking the job and then went about hiring a team of absolute partisans demonstrates that this is the witch hunt that Donald Trump has called it. And it not only is Bob Mueller a kind of assassin when it comes to investigations and criminal charges, but he hired a team of assassins. Look at these people. Weissman and Zinaid Ahmad both were involved in the Bruce Orr anti-Trump dossier in its earlier stages. They had a conflict of interest. They are not disinterested prosecutors. They have an interest here, and they shouldn't be on this team. And neither should Jeannie Ray, who represented Hillary Clinton. And another prosecutor in the case, Aaron Zebley, represented another individual in the Clinton email investigation. So all of these people, nearly all of them, have a bias against Trump in favor of Hillary Clinton, and Bob Mueller is responsible for hiring them.
Let me add one other point, is because when the FBI and the DOJ and these very same officials were warned by Bruce Orr about the dirty dossier in August of 2016, before the FISA in October of 2016, they all knew that none of this was verified. Andrew Weissman was one of the people that was briefed on that. Now, that to me sounds like a conflict of interest. And what I'm beginning to suspect may have happened is they decided to buy into the dirty Russian Clinton bought and paid for dossier as their roadmap to get Donald Trump.
When the prosecutors and investigators were in on the original plot to frame Trump and destroy him. They cannot be fair and neutral and objective. And the law is very clear, and the Supreme Court has said it as such, that a prosecutor in any case is to seek justice, not just to win a case. And where they have a record of bias and a conflict of interest, they may not serve. And, you know, William Barr, when he steps into the position as Attorney General, has to put a stop to this and hold these people accountable.
If I committed a fraud on a court, I believe I'd go to jail. If I withheld information from a court purposely, and obviously in this case now we know they all knew Hillary paid for it, and you turn it into a little asterisk, it may have a political taint. That's purposefully withholding crucial key information that probably would have impacted the decision of those judges, and I'd love to hear from them one day. We'll get back, John and Greg, as we continue. All right, as we continue, John Solomon and Greg Jarrett are with us. John will be fully breaking this story about Robert Mueller has been excoriated by the FISA court judges for withholding exculpatory evidence in the past. How many times do we know this happened?
Well, according to the documents I've seen, it looks like it was more than 75 FISA warrants between 1999 and 2002. So a very large number of cases. And if you remember, that was before the heyday of terrorism, so FISA warrants were a little less common. So you're talking about a fairly significant large number of warrants that had material flaws, and particularly the word that jumps out to me, because it's the word that that we've all been using when we look at what went on in this FISA warrant, the Carter Page one: omission, knowingly, willfully leaving out information that is so relevant to the court. I'll give you a good example that I pulled from this excoriation that the court gave the FBI on Mueller's watch. They were seeking a FISA warrant on a guy, and they didn't tell the court he's actually our informant. Now, that's a really big fact to let not let the FISA court know about. As big a fact as not telling the court that the guy that we're using as the primary evidence to justify this hates Trump, was leaking to the press.
This is a huge
and was
story.
By Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party Donald Trump.
All right, we'll have that tonight with John Solomon. Greg, as well tonight, will be joining us as well as Pam Bondi. That's 9 Eastern right here from the Swamp, Washington, D.C. Guys, thank you both. Appreciate it. When we come back, Matt Gaetz will get his reaction to the State of the Union and the speech last night. And then later, well, we have the very latest coming out of Virginia. What an utter, complete mess it's now become, as now the Attorney General admitting to being in blackface.
This is a moral issue. My administration has sent to Congress a common sense proposal to end the crisis on the southern border. It includes humanitarian assistance, more law enforcement, drug detection at our ports, closing loopholes that enable child smuggling, and plans for a new physical barrier or wall to secure the vast areas between our ports of entry. In the past, most of the people in this room voted for a wall, but the proper wall never got built. I will get it built. San Diego used to have the most illegal border crossings in our country. In response, a strong security wall was put in place. This powerful barrier almost completely ended illegal crossings. The border city of El Paso, Texas, used to have extremely high rates of violent crime, one of the highest in the entire country, and considered one of our nation's most dangerous cities. Now, immediately upon its building, with a powerful barrier in place, El Paso is one of the safest cities in our country. Simply put, walls work and walls save lives.
Walls work, walls save lives. The president laying out how they have worked in San Diego. They worked in El Paso, one area in the Yuma sector of Arizona. They went from 5 miles of walls to about 70. And there was a 98% stoppage of all illegal immigrants, a decline of 98%. Now, as the president mentioned there, many of you supported this. Now the question becomes, well, why are they not supporting it now? A president said you've supported Dreamers and DACA and all these other things and even furloughed employees. Well, the president offered all of those things to Democrats, but apparently the Democrats care more about their hatred, more about stopping this president from being even more successful than they do about Dreamers, about DACA, about the safety, security of the American people, which the president articulately laid out last night in terms of the problems across the southern border. You know, we now have 1,809 illegal crossing attempts a day. And as one article said, that's a ticking time bomb. And we know many of the people that are crossing that border. I know many come here for hope and opportunity and want to work and have a better life for their kids and grandkids, the vast majority. It's the 2%, though, that want to bring heroin and fentanyl in, the cartel members, gang members, MS-13. Those are the people that we're worried about, those that when they get here that have already in the past committed homicides against Americans, some 4,000. Those when they get here that have committed violent sexual assaults, that's 30,000, or the 100,000 violent assaults. Anyway, Matt Gaetz put an opinion out in USA Today. Congressman from Pensacola down in Florida, border walls work. Democrats know it. Yeah, they know it. They voted for it. They voted to fund it. Except now that it's actually real, they don't mean it.
Thanks so much for having me, Sean. And, you know, today is just a microcosm of the hypocrisy of Democrats as we face this crisis on our southern border. You know, earlier today, Democrats were trying to push legislation to, you know, to really deprive Americans of their Second Amendment rights. But when Republicans wanted to talk about the violence that illegal immigrants were bringing to communities with illegal firearms, well, then they didn't want to hear anything about that. You know, they want to deprive law-abiding citizens of rights, but they don't want to focus on the consequences of illegal immigration that a border wall would help to fix. And then you look at Nancy Pelosi's hypocrisy in not even putting on the floor of the House what the Democrats proposed for border security. I mean, you remember, Sean, when Nancy Pelosi said to the president, well, put your bill on the floor, prove that you can get the votes for a wall. And we did that. So if Nancy Pelosi has a different strategy, another way that she'd like to secure the border, why won't she have a vote on it? Put it before the American people. The truth is, Sean, there is no Democrat plan to secure the border. And this conference committee is not going to produce acceptable work product because the Democrats are going to make sure that it doesn't. And so ultimately, this president is going to have to use the funds that have been appropriated and authorized, and he is going to have to stop the cartels and gangs and human traffickers coming into our country. And I'll just ask you this, Sean. Did you see at the State of the Union when the president said he was going to put the cartels and the human traffickers out of business, he could not even get the Democrats to stand up and applaud to that? I thought that was sickening.
Well, there was a lot of those moments where they sat on their hands. Even the president talking about stopping infanticide or these abortions that apparently has become the cause celeb of Democrats in six different states. Now the U.S. Senate, they had a bill out yesterday to protect kids. And the president's talking about, can we, you know, stop aborting fully formed human souls, babies that are viable on their own in the ninth month, even up to the birthing of that child. Pretty amazing. Well,
it's not abortion. We should stop calling that abortion. I mean, you've made mention before that abortion is not an issue that you cover because, you know, there are reasonable people who can have reasonable differences at some level, and it invokes people's faith. But we can all agree that once life has been created, once a woman is dilating, once a baby is able to be viable outside the womb, that killing that child is not abortion. That is infanticide.
There's not a single person that I know that considers themselves pro-choice. Not one. When they heard the governor of Virginia, and by the way, what a mess now that state is in, when they heard the governor of Virginia say, well, we'll deliver the baby and make sure the baby's comfortable, and the mother will decide if the baby is in distress and needs resuscitation. That mother will make that decision, and then we'll have a chat. And I'm thinking,
jeez.
That is a human soul not only viable, but living, delivered comfortably, and literally being right in front of you. How any there's some disconnect in some people. You know, most people I know, if it was a kitten, if it was a puppy, describe the way the governor describes this baby. If it was a fish, for crying out loud, people would never allow that to happen. With the there's a callousness, a disconnect, a deep-rooted disconnection from reality just listening to him say that so cavalierly.
And Sean, I wonder how female voters are going to react to this. I mean, you know, you think about the bond between mother and children, and you know, the women I've spoken with, you know, since the State of the Union, were so appreciative that the president seems to recognize that bond. He understands that the most important organization in America is actually not the government. It's the American family. It's the bonds created within a family that show us how to treat other human beings that we interact with. And when we allow that dynamic and the human life to be treated with such disrespect, I worry about the negative consequences that spill over. But you're so right, Sean, whether it's rejecting the killing of born babies, rejecting the business model of cartels and human traffickers, or rejecting the idea of socialism as an organizing principle in American life, I thought that the president was trying to stake out the most comfortable ground for all Americans to be able to get behind an agenda that really speaks to our values and our future and our prosperity. Meanwhile, you've got Democrats that want to resist the very things that they themselves have supported in the past because they're allowing Trump to define what they believe. You know, that's not how, you know, look, conservatives made a mistake when we just opposed every single thing from Obama, because there might have been some of those things that we believed in, but we allowed him to define us in some cases. Here, Democrats are just the anti-Trump party. They're not for things that will improve quality of life for people.
No, it's even worse than that. What they're now, everything they hid in 2018, they're now bragging about and trying to use to generate support from their base. And, you know, if it means a wealth tax on money that people already were taxed on, if it means a 70 or 80 or 90% tax rate, if it means literally making it illegal, like Kamala Harris suggested, and have a single-payer healthcare system where you're not allowed to buy private health insurance. Now they're exposing themselves. Last question. Now the president looks like and has said he will go it alone, either the military, national emergency, some combination thereof. What I'm getting concerned about is what I'm reading, and that is that there are some Republican senators that are not willing to hold the line and do the right thing on the issue of safety and security and stopping drugs, cartels, and gangs, and that they may oppose the president's actions on this. That to me is almost unforgivable. What are they there for?
It would be selling out the country, Sean. The good news is that under existing law, if the president designates the border a critical drug trafficking corridor, he has the authority, without the Senate, without Nancy Pelosi, to begin construction to stop that corridor from remaining active. But it shows the true colors of some of these rhino senators that, you know, I think that they tend to lean into some of the open borders feelings within some corners of the Republican Party that want to benefit from cheap labor. But this president has defined our values correctly. We're for rising wages for the American worker, rule of law, and safe streets. And, Sean, that's an agenda that I think 80 to 90% of Americans can get behind.
All right, Congressman Gates, rising star Freedom Caucus member from Pensacola, the Panhandle. Congressman, great to hear from you, and we appreciate it if you come back often. Thank you. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, before we get to our news roundup information overload hour, boy, we got a mess unfolding in Virginia, as I told you about earlier. We have even more details. Now the Attorney General, the third in line. If Northam goes, then it would be the lieutenant governor. The lieutenant governor now facing very serious charges of sexual assault. Now the attorney general comes out today. He admits he dressed in blackface. Who's next? What, I guess the Speaker of the House? How far down the line do we need to get before there's even a possible replacement here for the people of Virginia? Anyway, Nathan is in Florida. Nathan, hi. How are you? And we're glad you called.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for taking my call. No, my point is I'm older enough to know that the problem, the Democrats are going to end up winning everything, and here's why. What they understand is that people want things for nothing. I heard your story yesterday about how you worked hard. I worked hard, too. But the average person today, they want free college tuition. They want free medical care. And that's how the Democrats are now dominant in New York, California, New Jersey, Virginia. They live off the dependency of others. That's their political strength. I mean, in California, when I was younger, they elected Ronald Reagan. You think Ronald Reagan could be the governor of California now? People don't want rugged individualism anymore. They haven't been trained about it in the schools. Let's say you had two restaurants. One of them gives great service, good food, and charges money, and the other one is subsidized by the government and gives crummy food, horrible service. I guarantee the good one will close and the crappy one will be open forever. And the best part, no one's ever going to pay the bill because that's the deficit.
Let me explain something. Everybody has a certain psychological makeup. Human beings tend to be prone, and I'm kind of missing this chip a lot, prone to be warriors. They worry, and rightly so. I don't know why, but when I had no money in my 20s and, you know, I was living on my own, financially independent, I really didn't worry about it. I just knew I'd go out and work every day, and I'd somehow make it through. But I wasn't making decisions like getting married because I couldn't afford to. And long story short, but when somebody comes along and says, we're going to give you a free education, well, we pay more per capita for education with the worst results that you can ever imagine. The worst bang on our dollar of anybody. An unholy alliance between teachers' unions and Democrats. Then they come along and they say, Obamacare, keep your doctor, keep your plan, pay less. Okay, everyone loses, millions lose their doctors, lose their plans, and only have one option, and everybody's paying more. Now they're saying they'll take away any chance you have at health care, keeping your own private plan, because it's going to be Medicare for all. Okay, when that fails, there's no insurance industry left to go to. There's a reason why Canadians come to America with their single-payer system when they want the best care. It'll be a disaster. People must realize you give up every bit of freedom when they give you false security. They never fulfilled their promise, ever. That is the fallacy of redistribution and socialism.
Stay right here for our final news roundup and information overload.
All right, news roundup, information overload. As we come to you from our nation's capital, we're still in the swamp. We get a retreat sometime later tonight, making plans to escape. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. We're going to go over some of the highlights of the president's speech in the next half hour. I want to go to what has now become a unmitigated, colossal disaster for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Now, let's go back in time and remember the House of Delegates in Virginia. They want to pass this bill. The woman who sponsors the bill, the same woman, by the way, who sponsored a bill to save caterpillars and some kind of worm that turns into a caterpillar. You can't kill the worm. She is being grilled in committee. Her name is, she's Delegate Kathy Tran in the House of Commons, about her proposal to allow abortion to the moment of birth. And remember, when they talk about dilation in this question, that means the birthing process has already begun. Listen to this.
How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay, but to the end of the third trimester.
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman.
I understand
that.
I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
So the woman who is giving in the process fully formed, fully developed, viable fetus. It's being born. Well, then the governor, Ralph Northam, he goes on this radio show in Virginia and explains, well, I'll tell you exactly what would happen. We deliver the baby. Well, listen.
If a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
Okay. In this situation, so the baby's going to be delivered and then made comfortable. And then the mother will decide if the baby's in distress. Remember, this is a human soul alive, being kept comfortable. The essence of innocence. If a baby isn't the essence of innocence, we've got to ask ourselves, what kind of country do we want to be? What kind of soul do we want to have? What values do we represent here? And then while the baby's being made comfortable, only the mother will decide whether to resuscitate the child or not, if the child is in distress. And then it goes even further, gets worse, as it relates for Ralph Northam. Because then this photo emerges from his medical school yearbook, him dressed, or a picture of a Klan member next to a person in blackface. And he apologizes for the photo. And then, like, the next day in another weird press conference, says, I wasn't in the yearbook photo. But I did dress in blackface. I darkened my face for a Michael Jackson costume contest. Cut six. Let's play. And then he wanted to do the moonwalk at that moment.
While I did not appear in this photo, I am not surprised by its appearance in the EVMS yearbook. In the place and time where I grew up, many actions that we rightfully recognize as abhorrent today were commonplace. My belief that I did not wear that costume or attend that party stems in part from my clear memory of other mistakes I made in the same period of my life. That same year, I did participate in a dance contest in San Antonio, in which I darkened my face as part of a Michael Jackson costume. I look back now and regret that I did not understand the harmful legacy of an action like that. It is because my memory of that episode is so vivid that I truly do not believe I am in the picture in my yearbook. You remember these things.
And you said that the competition in San Antonio was a dance competition?
Yes.
And it was that you danced the moonwalk?
That's right.
Are you still able to move
along? Inappropriate circumstances.
My wife says inappropriate circumstances.
He was going to do it. And when he admits all this, oh, it's hard to get off when you put shoe polish on your face. And he's missing something. There's a missing chip in here. As somebody that could be that disconnected on all of these specific issues. All right, now, then the next bomb, if you will, to drop is then you have the lieutenant governor, Fairfax, Justin Fairfax, is accused by a woman, going back to the Boston 2004 Democratic Convention, accusing him of literally forcing her into a violent sexual act. And she has come out and told her story, and that story now is gaining a lot of credibility because the woman who made the allegation now has a friend that corroborated that she had told her at the time exactly what had happened. Now, that now brings up the issue of the Democrats and all of those people during the hearings of Justice Kavanaugh that went out before we heard from any of the people making allegations. All those people going out there and saying, I believe, I believe, I believe. We have a montage of all the Democrats saying they believe. Listen.
Not only do women like Dr. Ford, who bravely comes forward, need to be heard, but they need to be believed. They need to be believed. I just want to say to the men of this country, just shut up and step up. Do the right thing.
Let me just say right at the outset, I believe Dr. Ford, I believe the survivor here.
I believe her. I stand with her. And
do you hope
I don't
she shows up on Monday? Do you hope that she testifies?
I don't think she should be bullied into this scenario.
I believe her.
I believe Professor Ford. I think she's credible.
Oh, I believe. Now the question is, do you believe the woman that is making the accusation against Fairfax? Because the accuser now has hired the attorney of Professor Christine Blasey Ford in that position. And Fairfax would, you know, the thinking was that when Northman had to resign, that it would be the lieutenant governor that would take over. Well, now he's facing not only serious assault charge against by this woman, but also the woman as a witness that will testify that she was told at the time that it actually had happened. Now, it gets worse for the lieutenant governor because NBC News reporting today, and what was first, I guess, sent out in a tweet, we haven't corroborated it on our own. The Washington Examiner has a copy of this as well. So there's multiple sources reporting this, that the lieutenant governor Fairfax, you know, made a pretty vulgar and disgusting reference to this woman, you know, saying, you know, this week when this issue came up at a meeting with staff, using the F that B word. I mean, unbelievable. So he would take over if the governor, who's absolutely nuts, has to step down or is asked to step down. Okay, so, well, then who then becomes the next person? How many people do you have to go through before you're going to get to the person that is going to govern the Commonwealth of Virginia? Now, with the governor and the lieutenant governor both facing scrutiny on these issues, the question is raised, what happens if both men resign from their positions? Now, Virginia has their constitution and the order of secession for the branch of the state government would mean that the state's attorney general would take over the governor's role. Okay, we got a little breaking news in that department as well today, because the attorney general's name is Mark Herring. And Mark Herring admitted he, too, has worn blackface in the past when he was in college in 1980. When I was a 19-year-old undergraduate in college, some friends suggested we attend a party dressed like rappers that we listened to at the time, like Curtis Blow, and perform a song. Herring said it sounded ridiculous, even now writing it, but because of our ignorance and glib attitudes and because we did not have an appreciation for the experiences and perspectives of others, and because of all of that, we dressed up, put on wigs and brown makeup. And he said, this was a one-time occurrence. I accept full responsibility for my conduct, and the revelation now further roils the top levels of the Virginia government. Now you're asking yourself, well, who would be next? Well, the next person in line would be the Speaker of the House of Commons. What are we going to find out about that person in the next couple of days? It is pretty amazing that this is all coming out in succession like this. Now, first you have the governor. It starts with abortion. Then after the abortion, then it goes to the blackface issue. Then the lieutenant governor, who was almost a fait accompli, he was going to step in for the governor. Now he has this problem with a serious sexual assault charge. And it goes on from there. You know, but the worst part of all of this to me is, you know, this high ground that everybody in the Democratic Party takes every 2 and 4 years, that they have a monopoly, a compassion on issues involving race in this country, when in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. You know, I went through a long history of the Democratic Party, you know, and race over the years, and it's not one that they should in any way be proud of. You know, you go back as far as you want. For example, the Republican Party is the party of Lincoln. The Republican Party is the party of the Emancipation Proclamation. You know, the Republican Party is the party of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the 65 Voting Rights Act. And when you go through all of this, what you see is a country, a party that, you know, the Southern Manifesto, that was all of the Democratic Party. Governor Wallace standing in a schoolhouse door, that's the Democratic Party. You know, Hillary Clinton's, you know, mentor, former Klansman, Robert KKK Byrd. Remember when he was on with Tony Snow? This is in 2000 and something. you know, that gives this ridiculous answer.
Are white. I've seen a lot of white in my time. I'm going to use that word. But we just need to work together to make our country a better country.
If you want to use that word, well, apparently he did want to use that word because he used it. And that is the J. William Fulbright, segregationist, Bill Clinton's great mentor in life and the person that he trusts. But every 2 and 4 years, without fail, every political season, Republicans are racist. Republicans are sexist. Republicans are misogynist and homophobic. You get the whole point. You know, Al Gore saying Republicans to a predominantly black audience changing his tone, cadence, speech delivery, which is just beyond the pale in and of itself. And now listen to this.
And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. Stand with me for the economic empowerment that is the next great civil rights frontier. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. Don't tell me we live in a colorblind society. The Republicans know that theirs is the wrong agenda for African Americans. That's why they don't even want to count you in the census. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed.
And just like Hillary Clinton, all of a sudden her tone, her cadence shifts, adjusts, changes.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me. And the chair of all the mayors in the country, Mayor Palmer from Trenton, New Jersey.
It is so sickening that the whole tone, cadence, delivery shifts before predominantly African-American audiences. Why don't you just be yourself? All the talk Republicans, look at the record low unemployment for minorities in this country under the policies of Donald J. Trump. Lowest record level unemployment for African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans, women in the workplace, Asian-Americans, youth unemployment. And our vets are going back to work. Even the new members of Congress dressed in white last night when he started rattling off the statistics about women had to stand up. Wait, don't sit down. Hang on. I got more to tell you. Don't sit down. He's high-fiving, having fun. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. So what struck me last night about the president's speech more than anything, what made it stand out, what made it the most powerful, is the fact that in 2 short years, he has taken us out of the economic doldrums of the Obama years with an amazing comeback, miracle, opportunity, and yes, conservatism works again. It was a pretty amazing night because his policies have worked. That's the list of accomplishments were massive. We're going to play some of this right now.
The decision is ours to make. We must choose between greatness or gridlock, results or resistance, vision or vengeance, incredible progress or pointless destruction. Tonight, I ask you to choose greatness. The agenda I will lay out this evening is not a Republican agenda or a Democrat agenda. It's the agenda of the American people. In just over 2 years since the election, we have launched an unprecedented economic boom, a boom that has rarely been seen before. There's been nothing like it. We have created 5.3 million new jobs and importantly added 600,000 new manufacturing jobs, something which almost everyone said was impossible to do. Nearly 5 million Americans have been lifted off food stamps. Unemployment has reached the lowest rate in over half a century. African American, Hispanic American, and Asian American unemployment have all reached their lowest levels ever recorded. More people are working now than at any time in the history of our country. 157 million people at work. This is a moral issue. The lawless state of our southern border is a threat to the safety, security, and financial well-being of all America. Tonight, I am asking you to defend our very dangerous southern border out of love and devotion to our fellow citizens and to our country. Wealthy politicians and donors push for open borders while living their lives behind walls and gates and guards. Working class Americans are left to pay the price for mass illegal immigration. Tolerance for illegal immigration is not compassionate. It is actually very cruel. Lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments from birth. These are living, feeling, beautiful babies who will never get the chance to share their love and their dreams with the world. And then we had the case of the governor of Virginia, where he stated he would execute a baby after birth to defend the dignity of every person. I am asking Congress to pass legislation to prohibit the late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in the mother's womb. Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country. America was founded on liberty and independence, and not government coercion, domination, and control. We are born free, and we will stay free. Tonight, we renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist country. If I had not been elected president of the United States, we would right now, in my opinion, be in a major war with North Korea. Much work remains to be done, but my relationship with Kim Jong-un is a good one. Chairman Kim and I will meet again on February 27th and 28th in Vietnam. Members of Congress, the state of our union is strong. That sounds so good. Our country is vibrant and our economy is thriving like never before. On Friday, it was announced that we added another 304,000 jobs last month alone, almost double the number expected. My administration has sent to Congress a common sense proposal to end the crisis on the southern border. It includes humanitarian assistance, more law enforcement, drug detection at our ports, closing loopholes that enable child smuggling, and plans for a new physical barrier or wall to secure the vast areas between our ports of entry. In the past, most of the people in this room voted for a wall, but the proper wall never got built. I will get it built. My fellow Americans, we meet tonight at a moment of unlimited potential. As we begin a new Congress, I stand here ready to work with you to achieve historic breakthroughs for all Americans. Millions of our fellow citizens are watching us now, gathered in this great chamber, hoping that we will govern not as two parties, but as one nation. The agenda I will lay out this evening is not a Republican agenda, or a Democrat agenda. It's the agenda of the American people. Many of us have campaigned on the same core promises to defend American jobs and demand fair trade for American workers, to rebuild and revitalize our nation's infrastructure, to reduce the price of health care and prescription drugs, to create an immigration system that is safe, lawful, modern, and secure, and to pursue a foreign policy that puts America's interest first. There is a new opportunity in American politics if only we have the courage together to seize it. Victory is not winning for our party. Victory is winning for our country. We have unleashed a revolution in American energy. The United States is now the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world. And now, for the first time in 65 years, we are a net exporter of energy. San Diego used to have the most illegal border crossings in our country. In response, a strong security wall was put in place. This powerful barrier almost completely ended illegal crossings. The border city of El Paso, Texas, used to have extremely high rates of violent crime, one of the highest in the entire country, and considered one of our nation's most dangerous cities. Now, immediately upon its building, with a powerful barrier in place, El Paso is one of the safest cities in our country. Simply put, walls work and walls save lives. No one has benefited more from our thriving economy than women, who have filled 58% of the newly created jobs last year. You weren't supposed to do that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All Americans can be proud that we have more women in the workforce than ever before. Don't sit yet. You're gonna like this. And exactly one century after Congress passed the constitutional amendment giving women the right to vote, we also have more women serving in Congress than at any time before. That's great. Very great. And congratulations. That's great. Here tonight, we have legislators from across this magnificent republic. You have come from the rocky shores of Maine and the volcanic peaks of Hawaii, from the snowy woods of Wisconsin and the red deserts of Arizona, from the green farms of Kentucky and the golden beaches of California. Together, we represent the most extraordinary nation in all of history. What will we do with this moment? How will we be remembered? I ask the men and women of this Congress, look at the opportunities before us. Our most thrilling achievements are still ahead. Our most exciting journeys still await. Our biggest victories are still to come. We have not yet begun to dream. We must choose whether we are defined by our differences or whether we dare to transcend them. We must choose whether we squander our great inheritance or whether we proudly declare that we are Americans. We do the incredible. We defy the impossible. We conquer the unknown. This is the time to reignite the American imagination. This is the time to search for the tallest summit and set our sights on the brightest star. This is the time to rekindle the bonds of love and loyalty and memory that link us together as citizens, as neighbors, as patriots.
So what made that all possible is in 2 years, Donald Trump's governed conservatively. Add to that, by the way, all the conservative originalist justices he put on the court. By the way, all you never Trumpers now, you're feeling a little bit guilty? No, you're probably not. Probably still want him to fail so you can say, see, we were right. But is the country better off today than we were 2 years ago? Infinitely better. All right, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. We have a lot of stories we are breaking. One huge story about FISA that goes right into Robert Mueller's office. The chaos that is Virginia. The governor, lieutenant governor, with the sexual assault charge. Now the attorney general next in line to be governor. If those two go, he also dressed in blackface. That's from D.C. tonight. We'll see you back in New York tomorrow. As always, thank you for being with us.